Lesson 8.
Word list.
President.
Interpret.
Security.
Residence.
Minister.
Unguarded.
Embassy.
Compound.
Regiment.
Disposal.
Quarters.
Filipino.
Secret service men.
Outside of.
Negotiation.
Regarding.
Infinitely.
Eloquence.
Major.
Dash.
Diplomatic.
Reception.
Observe.
Minor.
Instant.
Fatigue.
Considerate.
Touch.
Association.
Plenary.
Session.
Convene.
Setting.
Furnish.
Phase.
Lord.
Deputy.
Cabinet.
Proceedings.
Preside.
Formal.
Relaxed.
Involve.
Strain.
Eloquent.
Host.
Witness. Text.
Interpreting for the President at Tehran. We left Cairo on Saturday, November the 27th. I was in the second plane following the President's. After landing at the Ghali Morghi Airport, about 5 miles south of Tehran, we drove into town along a road which, as we arrived at the city limits, was lined with people. The Russians and the British, as well as the Americans, were concerned over Iran's loose security measures. The plan had been for the President to stay at the residence of the American minister. This would have required Roosevelt to drive daily through unguarded streets across town to the Soviet and British embassies. Stalin proposed that Roosevelt move into a separate building in the heavily guarded Soviet compound, where the meetings could be held in safety. Churchill had no fears. The British embassy, which was nearby, was guarded by a regiment of Sikhs. Roosevelt accepted Stalin's offer, and on November the 28th moved to the building Stalin put at his disposal. It had 3 or 4 large downstairs rooms, as well as quarters for the President's Filipino servants and numerous Secret Service men. I was quartered at an American army camp outside of Tehran. I was a little nervous at the prospect of interpreting for the President. The Moscow Conference of Foreign Ministers had been good practice, but this meeting was at the highest level. In the few minutes I had with the President before his first meeting with Stalin, I outlined certain considerations regarding interpreting. I asked if he would try to remember to break up his comments into shorter periods of time. I said that if he talked very long, his Russian listeners, not understanding what was said, would probably lose interest. On the other hand, speaking for 2 or 3 minutes at a time would hold their attention and make my job infinitely easier. Roosevelt understood, and I must say he was an excellent speaker to interpret for, showing in a variety of ways consideration for my work. Churchill was much too carried away by his own eloquence to pay attention to his pleasant and excellent interpreter, Major Arthur H. Burse. There were occasions when Churchill would speak for 5, 6, or 7 minutes, while poor Major Burse dashed his pencil desperately over the paper, trying to capture enough words to convey the eloquence into Russian. While I had met Roosevelt at large diplomatic receptions in Washington, my contact had been limited to a brief handshake and an exchange of a few words. Tehran was the first opportunity I had of observing him at close hand. Except for one minor incident, he seemed to be in excellent health, never showing any signs of fatigue, and holding his magnificent head high. He clearly was the dominating figure at the conference. I found him pleasant and considerate, and his personal touch made our association agreeable. The first plenary session of the Tehran conference convened in the conference room at the Soviet embassy at 4 p.m. The setting was rather heavy for the warm climate. The room, which was fairly big, was furnished with large chairs and a round table with a green baize cover. Four from each country sat at the table. Harriman sat at Roosevelt's right, I at Roosevelt's left, and Hopkins next to me. With Stalin were Voroshilov, Molotov, and Pavlov. Churchill brought Eden, Lord Ismay, Deputy Secretary to the War Cabinet, and Major Burse as interpreter. Soviet secret policemen guarded the room. Before proceedings, Churchill and Stalin agreed that Roosevelt, the only head of state, would preside at the first formal session. Everything was so relaxed, it did not seem possible that the conference was about to make decisions involving the fortunes of millions of people. There was nothing of the strain so frequently found on great occasions. Roosevelt's first words were in a light vein. As the youngest of the three, he said, he welcomed his elders. Churchill was the most eloquent, saying, "In our hands we have the future of mankind." As host, Stalin welcomed his guests, and then added, "Now let us get down to business."